Thanks for listening to Access Utah, an extended version of the program. We're talking about the future of Bears Ears National Monument. Secretary, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke has released his interim report, his interim recommendations. The comment period on Bears Ears has been extended, he says, to July 10th. So you have a time, if you have not, to get your comments in. We'd love to get your comment right here as well. What do you think is important in this debate? What do you think should happen to Bears Ears? Should the size be shrunk? Should it be expanded? Should it be kept at status quo? What about Secretary Zinke's other recommendations? We're talking with various stakeholders coming up later in this program. To end the program, we'll have Chris Sager, Executive Director of the Western Values Project. Right now, we bring on Bruce Adams, San Juan County Commissioner. Mr. Adams, welcome to the program. Do we have you, Mr. Adams?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Thank you. Thanks for taking the time. What's your reaction, first of all, to Secretary Zinke's recommendations?
I think it's unprecedented that a president of the United States and the Secretary of Interior would pay any attention to a small group of people like San Juan County, which has about 15,000 residents. It's unprecedented in the way they have come to listen to local voices about an important issue.
So you agree that the monument boundary should be shrunk? Do you see, or should the president go further?
Well, what the president did before was use the Antiquities Act to create a monument. If you read the Antiquities Act, it talks about special things that need to be protected. It also talks about those historical special things that should be protected with the smallest amount of land possible to actually protect them. I think that President Obama did not use the Antiquities Act correctly and overstated the size of the monument with what he was trying to protect.
What are the stakes, do you think? What's the jeopardy? What's the harm in a monument designation? Is it economic harm?
I don't know that it's economic harm. What I have seen since the designation in December is I've seen hundreds and hundreds of people coming to San Juan County to look at this new monument. They are all over the county. In a unorganized way. I'm worried about the cultural resources and the damage that might be done to those cultural resources. I'm worried about the other resources, the camping areas, the areas on the forest where people are making new inlets to do their camping, where there's no restroom facilities, where there's no camping facilities, and what kind of damage is being done throughout our county with people who are just coming here to visit and see the splendor of San Juan County, but it's in such an unorganized way and so mismanaged that's my concern right now.
Now, some would say, well, that's a good thing. That don't visitors bring their money? Can't that be a boost to the economy? Can't management be adjusted to accommodate them?
Absolutely. And that's what needs to be done. But so many of them are coming and they're not choosing not to stay in motels, but take their camp gear out on the land, and they're leaving trash. There's no restroom facilities, like I say. So it's pretty unmanaged right now, and absolutely there needs to be more management and more direction given.
What would you like to see in terms of multiple use? Would you like to see more, say, oil industry there, less oil industry, more tourism, less tourism, more grazing, less grazing?
All of the above.
All
right
of it.
Now,
okay.
In San Juan County, we have minerals to be extracted. There's a false narrative that has been portrayed in the media that all of those resources exist within the Bears Ears Monument. That's absolutely untrue. If you check with the state oil and gas office in Salt Lake City, they can give you an indication of where most of those oil and gas resources exist. They don't exist within the monument. I won't say that there's not any, but there is very limited amount of oil and gas to be extracted, and there's no infrastructure. There's no incentive on the part of oil and gas industry to go out and try to do something within the Bears Ears Monument because there's no infrastructure and there's not enough resource for them to spend their money. Where the oil and gas exists is outside of the Bears Ears Monument and in the north and east of the county.
And is that okay to proceed, or is that being impeded in some way by a monument designation?
I don't think that's being impeded by the monument designation. It's being impeded by the managers of the monument.
Yeah, and that's devil's always in the details, isn't it, the management plan. I wanted to get into management. I got a poll at my private residence the other day on Bears Ears. Seemed to be pretty neutral for a while. Then they used the phrase land grab, which I thought, okay, they're taking a side. So I wonder, valid point of view. Many don't agree with it, but many do. And that gets us into a crux of this argument, which is who should manage? Should it be federal? Should it be state? Should it be county? And who do you trust to manage that? Where do you come down on that?
Well, I don't have a lot of trust for the BLM. They've been managing all of these resources the last 50 years. If there's been any looting or any of those things that have been stated, which I think, you know, some have stated, you have to point to who's managing a little bit. We have experience in the county of dealing with state institutional trust lands, which is land that's managed by the state. I'm not necessarily advocating that the state institutional trust lands manage it, but we're more comfortable with state management, and we also would like to see some sort of management mechanism that involves the county and the local citizens.
So you don't feel like perhaps the county local citizens have their voices heard with the BLM, say, for example?
No, they absolutely do not. You know, there's a principle called coordination with the BLM, and any time BLM is doing a planning process or any kind of a process, they're supposed to coordinate that with the county master land plan or the county master plan. We've had numerous incidents where that did not occur and has created a lot of mistrust amongst our citizens and our elected officials.
Regina Lopez-Whiteskunk was on earlier. She talked about culture. It's very important to her and Native American peoples, and she felt like the National Monument designation best preserved those lands, allowed access. We heard a differing point of view from Representative Noel earlier that the current law, he says, protects, for example, cultural artifacts. I want to get into this idea of culture. That's important to many people, not just Native Americans. It's a way of life. Isn't it? You kind of got into that a little bit with a lot of people coming in and and taxing the infrastructure to want to see this new monument, which may be viewed with resentment, I don't know, by longtime residents there.
Well, let me make very clear my position on culture. I'm very interested in preserving the artifact culture that's here, the ruins, the all of the Native American artifacts that exist on this land. I think it's reprehensible for anybody to destroy, to loot, to defame, to do anything to that. But I also believe that there are a number of laws and a number of regulations that have been implemented by the BLM. In fact, I think there's 11 layers of protection within this county on those sensitive cultural sites. to me, to put a monument layer on top of 11 existing layers is not going to create any more protection. It is simply going to draw more people to the area who can then do things that damage those cultural sites, and I'm very concerned about that.
I wonder about the environmental point of view. I could state it this way. Some areas need, you could call it heavier protections, stricter protections. We talk about wilderness areas, for example. Because in certain areas, if the environment is degraded, then it's degraded forever.
Well, I don't agree with what they're saying about it. I agree with protecting sensitive areas. The problem with the environmental community's accusations about denigrating these areas, I just haven't seen it. I haven't seen where those areas have been denigrated. In fact, I'm a rancher. I raise cattle here. This county at one time had tens of thousands of cattle grazing here. With all of the management policies of the BLM, that has been shrunk significantly. And I think a lot of that resource, if it's being denigrated, it's because some of those areas are not being grazed, and it's healthy for grass and it's healthy for browse and brush to be grazed and then have new growth come back every year. So that's just one example, the grazing thing. Up on the mountain, we have a huge infestation of bark beetles. We have dead trees all over every place. We've lost our timber industry. That was keeping the forest healthy. So sometimes when you put all these protections like wilderness or wilderness study areas or areas with wilderness characteristics or natural areas or scenic areas, you put all these protections on and you're actually denigrating the resource because you're not using it properly.
I don't know if you graze on public lands?
I do.
So I'm sure you've heard the argument that, and you've made an environmental argument that grazing is good for the environment. Others have said that ranchers, that the federal government is putting their thumb on the scale, Department of Agriculture, for example, and ranchers are getting a sweet deal where some other industries maybe aren't.
Well, ranchers have been grazing ever since the settlement of this area, and they went through the Taylor Grazing Act. They've gone through the management of the BLM. It's a highly restrictive process. They've reduced the number of cattle. Many of us have been here for generations. Our ancestors came here at great sacrifice when nobody cared at all about San Juan County. Settlers came in here. They came in here to make friends with the Indians, to help them, help provide some services, some food, things like that, to be friendly to them. Ranchers have been here as long as any industry, and I just don't see where the sweet deal is. I can't find a rancher around here who doesn't struggle every day to try and make his operation work and try to provide for his family.
A final question for you, Mr. Adams. We're talking, by the way, with Bruce Adams, San Juan County Commissioner. Some organizations have pointed to polls, which they say characterizes supporting the monument as it is by heavy margins. Would from your constituents, people you talk to, what's the attitude toward Bear's Ears as presently constituted?
Well, I think that the local people that live here and try to make a living here every day, they don't agree with the size of the monument. They're okay with some protections being offered. They're okay if the Antiquity Act is applied fairly and applied the way it was written. You know, I said before, there's only 15,000 people in this county. We're 5 million acres big. We have people from New York. We have people from all over the country that come here, and they go out and explore, and they get lost. And guess who has to foot the bill and the expense to go find them? Our search and rescue, our sheriff, our emergency medical services. We try to welcome people here. We try to be friendly to them. I think a lot of times polls are slanted because of the way the questions are asked. I think people who live in San Juan County have a different view maybe than somebody that just comes here and visits occasionally. I think their voice should be maybe a little louder than somebody that's never been here or maybe plans on coming someday or just lives someplace else and comes occasionally. People live outside of San Juan County. They might have jobs that make them big money. I challenge people like Patagonia or some of these outdoor industry people that think it's so important for San Juan County to have this protection. I wish that they would come to San Juan County that has the highest unemployment rate in the state and one of the highest in the nation. Bring your industry down here and create 100 jobs in San Juan County if you think this is such an important place that there needs to be a monument. Bring your industry here. Create some economic development for the people that are absolutely below the poverty line and suffering.
Okay, we'll leave it there. You've put out the word. We'll hear if Patagonia is listening. Bruce Adams, San Juan County Commissioner, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We will conclude the program following this next break with Chris Sager, Executive Director of the Western Values Project. And you can join the program, hope that you will, with your view of what the president should do. Secretary Zinke's interim recommendations are out. The comment period has been extended to July 10th. We'd love to get a comment here from you at 800-826-1495 or upraccess@gmail.com. More following this break.
Next time on Ask Me Another, we're joined by actor and author Annabelle Gurwitch. We talk about her latest memoir, Wherever You Go, There They Are, stories about my family you might relate to. And we've rewritten classic Hall & Oates songs to be about stores at the mall. Now I can go for that. So join me, Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia.
Join us Saturday morning at 10 on Utah Public Radio.
Alex Honnold just free soloed El Capitan. How do you do that?
The very minimum is just like hanging by one finger, I suppose. While free soloing, I try to maintain slightly more control.
Two fingers.
Yeah, yeah, that's double the control.
Yeah, I speak to it at times. I ask the mountain not to kill me.
You're serious. You actually do this. This is not just a joke.
No, not really.
Peak performance. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI.
Join us Sunday morning at 9 on Utah Public Radio.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We are in an extended version of Access Utah. We're talking about the future of Bears Ears National Monument, which also gets into issues of the future of many national monuments. President Trump ordered Secretary Zinke, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, to review not only Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante in Utah, but many other national monuments. The shortest deadline was Bears Ears. That was 45 days. So we now have the interim report with interim recommendations from Secretary Zinke, including that the boundary be revised. We assume that means that the boundary be shrunk, and other recommendations from Secretary Zinke. We'll see what happens. Comment period is extended to July 10th. We have a caller. Let's put a pause on Jennifer and Vernal so that I can welcome in Chris Sager, Executive Director of Western Values Project. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Appreciate you being on with us. We'll get your perspective on this after we get perspective from Jennifer. Jennifer and Vernal, glad you called. Go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for a long time. My great-grandfather was a Native American in Tahoe, California, and married a white person, and so somehow through a series of those kinds of marriages, I ended up being born into that family, and and it also includes the Adams family from Boston, Massachusetts, which has been around for a little while. But I think I had a discussion with a Ute tribal member at the library the other day, and I said, this country, and I'm going to cry because I feel very strongly about this country is not going to heal until it acknowledges the horrendous things that it's done, starting with the Native Americans, okay, and then dragging slaves from Africa and other places, and then and other atrocities overseas, then locking up people of Japanese descent who were citizens of the country until amends are made for these crimes and for any crimes that have been committed against the earth, for instance, the atomic bomb. Until we make amends for these offenses, we as a country are not going to heal. And so that's, I think, the key is everybody sit down. And Zinke, that whole trip was planned ahead of time. He just listened to elected officials who don't necessarily represent, you know, if you look at this guy who supposedly represents us, 92% of his campaign contributions are from out of the district, from out of the state. He doesn't represent us. He represents the oil and gas industry. You know what I'm saying? So listen, we need to sit down, start from square one, like 10, 12,000 years ago, and speak to the descendants of the people who were here first, and then move on from there, and then acknowledge each crime we, the United States of America, each crime we have committed against human beings and against the earth, and then we have a fighting chance of healing. If we don't do that, I don't think we're going to heal. And that's my assessment of the whole mess. All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. Jennifer and Vernal, thank you for that. We appreciate that. Let's turn to Chris Sager, Executive Director of Western Values Project. Tell us, first of all, what Western Values Project is.
Sure. So Western Values Project is an organization that takes a government accountability approach to the management of public lands. We want to make sure the public lands are managed in a way that is transparent and ethical, and that the decision makers in Washington, D.C. and in the states that are affecting those public lands are doing it according to a strict ethical standard, and the taxpayers are getting a fair deal.
Let me see. I had a note being showed to me through the window. Got distracted. Sorry about that. So thank you, Chris Sager with the Western Values Project. What's the point of view of the Western Values Project and on Bears Ears, especially the recommendation now from Secretary Zinke?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's many disappointing things about this recommendation. I mean, it is not only a direct attack on the protected places in Bears Ears that need protection because they have historic antiquities, but it's also passing the buck to Congress, and it's passing the buck to a Congress that has been incredibly ineffectual. I mean, Secretary Zinke's order lays out all of these things that he thinks Congress should do. Well, we've got news for him. Congress tried to do something about Bears Ears last year, and they failed pretty spectacularly. Congressman Bishop's Public Lands Initiative really crashed and burned at sort of the 11th hour of the Obama administration, forcing the last president to declare the monument. So it is disappointing to the extent that he's recommending the monument be made smaller, and I think it's going to send us back down a very unproductive path by asking Congress, and particularly by asking Congressman Bishop to revisit this issue.
We've had differing points of view in this hour and a half on the Antiquities Act. You could take a more expansive view, and Professor Kiter said that that view has been upheld in the courts previously. You could take a more restrictive view, as Secretary Zinke takes it. Where do you come down on this? How should the Antiquities Act be used?
I think most legal scholars agree that, to the extent we're talking about the Antiquities Act in the first place and how it ought to be used, this was the appropriate use. I mean, it is supposed to be something that is used to protect historic artifacts, and that is exactly what's at stake in Bears Ears. And those artifacts had been under threat of looting for a very long time in ways that are very well documented. Now, when it comes to the authority of President Trump to repeal this, I think most legal scholars are in agreement that presidents don't have the authority to do this, that only Congress does. And that was really, I think, at least partially reflected in the order that Secretary Zinke released. What that doesn't account for is the politics of Congress these days and the politics of the Utah congressional delegation, who have been, pretty spectacularly ineffective at doing anything for bears' ears through their work in Congress.
By the way, Steve has commented on Jennifer. He appreciates Jennifer's comments. He says, Jennifer and Vernal, wow, riveting radio and moving. So thank you very much, Jennifer. Thanks for that, Steve. So you say that, and Professor Kider as well, at the beginning of the program, also said this, that is a pretty clear courts of that president cannot repeal a monument. What about reducing the size? Is that within his purview, according to the courts?
Well, I think that's debatable, and that's probably something we're going to find out through the courts. I mean, you know, there's a question of whether or not they're allowed to do this, and there's a question of whether or not it's a good idea, whether or not they're allowed to do this. And I think, even if they're allowed to make the monument smaller, it's not a good idea. I mean, the monument was drawn in a way that accommodates actually a lot of traditional resource development, including, you know, uranium mining right at the doorstep of the monument. And it did it in a way that is historic to the more, I guess, important traditional uses of the land immediately within the current boundaries, in order to protect, you know, areas that are important to the first peoples of the area and that would have some long-term value in terms of, you know, creating a tourist economy. So those boundaries accomplish those goals, and reopening the case, I think, is only going to prolong what has been a very vitriolic, very contentious, and at least in Congress, a very slow-moving and ineffectual process.
Would this be best handled in Congress if we had an actual functioning Congress?
Yeah, I mean, look, to the extent that we have a functioning Congress, and, you know, we have a Congress that is capable of getting things done and capable of, you know, actually taking both sides under consideration, yeah, sure. But, I mean, neither one of those criteria are met by people like Congressman Rob Bishop, who the previous caller pointed out had taken a lot of campaign contributions from the oil and gas industry and is going to be listening first and foremost to the special interests that brought him to power. When he takes a look at how he wants to draw the boundaries on something like bears' ears. And as a matter of fact, I mean, the proposals that Congress has put forward really reflect that. I mean, they allow for far more, resource development that could put at risk some of these historic antiquities than the current boundaries, which, by the way, like I said, you know, sort of cordon off a lot of the areas that are ripe for uranium or oil and gas development and still allow those things to go forward.
Should those uranium, gas, oil, should that continue? And on public lands or adjacent to public lands? I mean, some groups, some individuals say no, that's degrading the environment, even if it's just adjacent.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's our belief that we should plan for those activities in a way that takes into account how important like bear's ears is. It's possible to do these things in a way that, it's possible to achieve balance. It's possible to say these are some areas that are good for uranium or oil and gas development, and these are areas that have a real value to the outdoor economy because they can drive tourism, because they have historic artifacts and things like that. Those two things can, it has been demonstrated, exist side by side. I mean, there's been a long-running process in Moab through the master leasing plan where regular people have come together on all sides of an issue and sat down and done exactly that. They've looked at a map and said, this is the best place for oil and gas development to proceed, and these are the best places that we need to protect for things like mountain biking that make Moab a world-class destination. I mean, that's really the model because it takes into account all sides. You know, the decision that we've seen from Secretary Zinke in this recommendation is something that is really taking into account a few extreme voices and a few voices that are interested in developing public lands at the expense of all other uses.
That's a hopeful view that people actually will sit down and consider all sides. It's not been the case in many of these fights, has it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, but I think the contrast there between a place like Moab and a place like Washington, D.C., I think is pretty striking and almost speaks for itself. I mean, you know, when you actually allow for people to do landscape level planning on public lands at the local level, things get done, and they get done in a way that, you know, maybe not everybody's 100% happy, but they're 80% happy, and that's pretty good. You know, the way the Public Lands Initiative worked for Congressman Bishop in Washington, D.C., was that it was all or nothing, and that it was he either needed to get 100% of what he wanted, and that the oil and gas industry needed to get 100% of what they wanted, or nobody was going to get anything. You know, that's the direction that Secretary Zinke is sending this. I mean, he is telling politicians in Washington, D.C., and all the dysfunction that goes along with it, that they know better than people on the ground who are capable of sitting down and coming up with a reasonable solution.
So all voices being heard, you say it can be done. Does that lead you to the conclusion that states ought to be managing these lands to the federal government?
No, not at all. I think it leads us to the conclusion that there's more to be done in terms of facilitating that kind of collaboration. I mean, the master leasing plan process that I, you know, described that's going on in Moab is something that is done under the auspices of the Bureau of Land Management as it's, you know, currently constructed. That is a much more sensible and much more affordable way than, you know, asking states to take on this gigantic multi-billion-dollar responsibility that includes fighting wildfires and all the other expensive things that come along with it. I mean, there are very good examples right now of that kind of collaboration happening under the current framework.
This I brought this up with Commissioner Adams. I told the story that I got this poll. Seemed pretty neutral at first, and then they used this phrase land grab. And that's, I've heard in conversation with friends, I've heard the either approvingly used or in puzzlement. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that, because these are public lands in any case, right? We're just arguing over what the designation should be.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the ownership of these lands still belongs to all Americans. I mean, you know, the ownership on this thing didn't change. I mean, there's just different decisions about the way it's managed, and those decisions were made in response to the vandalism that was occurring on against Native American artifacts. So, you know, there has been no transfer of title in Bears Ears. There's just a different approach to managing the land, and it's an approach that changed for a good reason.
I suppose what some might be getting to is they want it more state and less federal. We've talked a bit about that. I've been asking everyone, and throw this out to listeners as well, what are the stakes here? What do you see as the most important when we talk specifically about designation as a national monument? Keeping Bears Ears as is or shrinking it, keeping management plan, changing management plan. Is it environmental? Is it economy? Is it culture? Is it all of the above?
I think it's all of the above, and I think, you know, the economy is a really important part of it. I mean, the outdoor economy is a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar industry. I mean, the state of Utah recently felt the pain of, you know, the Outdoor Industry Association leaving over something like Bears Ears. I think, you know, if Utah's politicians continue to take a tack that says those kinds of uses are not an equal partner in the way that public lands are managed, the economy is going to continue to suffer, and not just because, you know, trade shows are going to leave, but because there are not, you know, the kind of world-class destinations that attract people from all over the world to create tourism jobs and to support, you know, all of the outdoor manufacturers that are attendant to that tourism.
We just have a couple of minutes left. We'll give you the last word on this whole discussion, hour and a half plus. Chris Sager, Executive Director of the Western Values Project. I'll frame it this way. What would your advice be to President Trump in terms specifically of Bears Ears, but also the other national monuments that are under review?
I would advise him to leave well enough alone, and I would advise him not just to listen to, you know, the oil and gas industry that seems to have infiltrated the Trump administration at every level, but to understand that there are ordinary public lands users that deserve to have a seat at the table, that deserve to be heard. And it's not just because, you know, that long belongs to them that they should have a seat at the table. It's because there's an outdoor economy that is attached to the use of public lands that is, you know, that deserves to have a seat at the table and deserves to be considered equally along with the rest of the industries, and that the government shouldn't pick winners and losers in these cases.
And we will leave this for further comment. You have a chance to comment to the Interior Department that is now open on Bears Ears through July 10th. And we've been talking about Secretary Zinke's interim report. We've had with us in this last portion of the program Chris Sager, Executive Director of the Western Values Project. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. And we thank our other guests in reverse order, Bruce Adams, San Juan County Commissioner, Regina Lopez-Whiteskunk with the Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition, Representative Mike Noel, and Robert Kiter with the Stegner Center at University of Utah. Thank you so much for responding. You can continue your responses with your comment or questions on this important subject at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And thanks to everyone for participating today. Thanks for listening.